Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
It's Mail It In Friday.
Certainly there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
Yeah, whatever.
You just gotta keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes and Gordon Miller got Wimbledon up in the studio, and it's 6 o'clock Eastern time, but 11 p.m. in London. And the rule is in Wimbledon that you're not supposed to be able to play past 11 p.m.
The local town council, where the All England Club is, passed a curfew when they put the roof on and the lights in because they didn't want too much traffic in the neighborhood. So the latest they've ever played there was 11:02 local time. Andy Murray finished off a match. So right now, Djokovic and Nadal are playing a tiebreak
in the third set.
I'm guessing they'll let them finish the tiebreak.
I guess, then, you know, listen, I don't really care. For me, just let them continue to play. I don't live in the Wimbledon area, though, and I wasn't on the town council when I decided that no one's allowed to play that late. But I will say this. Allowing them to break the rules, quote-unquote, or bend the rules, seems a little bit inconsistent. Like, well, what's stopping the next guy from showing up tomorrow with fluorescent pink laces and being like, hey, I thought 11 p.m. So what, we're allowed to bend some rules? Well, I'm going to bend some rules now.
So here's the thing, like San Jose has a real advantage. The Sharks' built-in advantage, their airport curfew. So when teams play back-to-backs going into San Jose, they have to land in Oakland and bus down. They often don't get to their hotel till 3, 3:30 in the morning. The Sharks, if they're playing back-to-backs, just write a check to the city of San Jose for breaking the curfew.
Well, why can they do that and the other teams can't?
Exactly.
But let's be honest, though, a lot of times when you're playing there back-to-back, you're coming from L.A., or Anaheim.
You don't get into. You're not going to make.
How are you getting in at 3:30 in the morning if you played in L.A.?
Because you land, right? You land in Oakland at midnight.
Yeah, which is what, 45 minutes away?
From San Jose?
Yeah, it's not that far.
45 minutes from San Francisco to San Jose. Even longer.
Yeah, Oakland's across the bridge.
But you got to go, you know, from Oakland through San Francisco and down to San Jose. That's if your plane lands at midnight.
Right. It's still a huge benefit. I've heard that. Like teams getting out of San Jose, they are running out of the building.
They scramble to get out to beat the curfew.
I didn't know that, though, that the Sharks are like, here's some money.
Well, they caught the Sharks doing it in the playoffs. Not caught, but it turned out that they were, here comes the tournament referee.
I love this. Look how stuffy and
Andrew
typical.
Jarrett. Now I think he's the referee at the U.S. Open, too. He's
so, I guess we got to track what's going on here.
We're done here, boys.
We can't do this on the air and try to figure this out. We'll let you guys figure it out. Tell us what they're doing here with Nadal and Djokovic. But
they're packing up.
Okay, so is it still the tie break in the third set? I don't think anybody won.
Hang on.
Djokovic won.
Djokovic won the third set. Okay, so they allowed that to finish. So Djokovic is up 2-1, and it will resume tomorrow.
So here's my beef, okay? So a guy a few years ago, he lived next to the Islington Golf Course, right? And he complained about balls from a par three coming to his backyard. And they had to erect this big netting and move the tee and everything else. Okay, I think Islington opened in like 1926. If you bought the house in 1925, hey, you're right. If you bought a home near Wimbledon, anytime after Wimbledon became a tournament, I'm sorry, you knew.
But here's the thing, though. I'm not familiar with the neighborhood. Living on a golf course is very different than living within a few blocks of a tennis tournament.
To be honest, if you took the All England Club, it is literally like dropping it in the middle of a neighborhood.
Right.
It's the same as Lambeau Field.
Yeah, it's like Wrigley, too, in Chicago.
It's right. I mean, there are houses across the street from it.
Right.
So what happens is you got a ton of people here, and they're all going to pile out at various times when the match is over. So you're going to have 25,000 people exiting the grounds, and they don't want them doing it at midnight or 1 a.m.
Okay, well, that's fine, but like you, I guess what I'm saying is it's very different. Like, if you live within a community and there happens to be something a couple blocks away, then setting up shop on the third hole of a golf course. Like, golf course, I understand the complaint because you paid a lot of money, and even though you knew it was there, you're paying a lot more than Joe Schlub who's teeing off. You might be paying $1 million for that house. He's paying, what, $5,000 a year to play that course? I understand why the homeowner would be like, you got to listen to my beef. You got to read my letter. But you wrote a letter. Bet you that's what happened.
I think you wrote a letter to city council, and they
yes.
signed it.
Well, and I can imagine why they would. This seems a little bit more ridiculous in Wimbledon. You know, like it's once a year. You have a tournament there once a year. And the only chance of people pouring out late is on the main court late in the tournament.
And they also make a fortune, the people that live around it, renting out their homes.
Oh, Airbnb
spots.
And stuff, of course.
Oh, they, like, most people live at SW19. They bail out during Wimbledon. And you know, apartments for rent there. I mean,
it's a great spot. Well, that'll happen here in Toronto when the World Cup comes here in 2026. People are going to make a fortune downtown. Put your condos up for rent.
I'll rent out the house.
You could rent out the house. You're probably a little bit too far from BMO.
What?
That's the problem.
I'm right by the subway line.
Yeah, but who wants? You know, that's like you're going to New York and you. Why would you rent a place in the Bronx?
Well, there's a lot of reasons you wouldn't rent a place in the Bronx.
I know that, but, you know, I'm not comparing North Toronto to the Bronx necessarily.
Thanks a lot.
But, you know, the life of the city is going to be further downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, you can put it up if you want.
Thanks thanks for raining on my parade. I really appreciate that.
What I'm saying is I think crickets are coming your way. I don't think you're going to get any
Everyone thinks you're going to get rich at the Olympics. When their city gets the Olympics, going to get rich, mm-hmm. going to rent the house out. Never happened.
I heard a story, and I heard it. I'm pretty sure this is true. Pretty sure this is real news, not fake news. And it was a brilliant move. Now, what you just said may mean it didn't turn out to be as brilliant as this person thought. But there was a guy who bought one of those packages where you can get spots at different resorts around the world. Like, you know, there's resorts where they have like 10 different spots around the world. And this guy, he set it up. He wanted to buy this package. But he said, I'll only buy it if you guarantee me that I get access to your resort in Rio in 2014 and 2016, which is when the World Cup was going.
And the Olympics.
And the company didn't put two and two together. And they're like, yeah, okay, go ahead. I don't care. Like, here, sign. He's like, no, but you're guaranteeing I get. They're like, yes, here's your rooms. You're already locked in. And I guess he flipped it. I don't know how much money he would have made. But how brilliant. I'll bet you he paid for the whole thing, potentially.
Maybe.
Because it was like a beautiful resort, like clean, nice neighborhood in Rio. Money. Thinking ahead.
See, but what happens is what we did, like for the Torino Olympics, is we waited to rent the house that we were in. We waited and then got a great place.
That's the move. It's like scalping tickets. If you wait until Sunday, halfway through the first inning.
Living with James Duthie, Bob McKenzie, and Ryan Rashog.
Different story.
Yeah.
Joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, he is the voice of MLB on ESPN Radio. He's going to be calling the Home Run Derby next week on radio. He's back on the show. Here's John Chombi. How you doing, John?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Just prepping for the Home Run Derby, man. I mean, how do you make this exciting? Because it's a beautiful visual, but I got a lot of appreciation for a guy who can do this on radio. I mean, what's that like?
I'm not going to lie. I called the game on Tuesday, so I'm kind of a little more focused on that. So of the two events, I'm a little more focused on calling the game and that. And we do a lot of interviews and stuff like that. So that's really the. You know, we're not documenting every single home run. Like, you can't do it.
No.
You know, I think as it gets into the later stages, you know, we focus on it a little bit more. And when someone hits 17,000 feet, we'll definitely document that. But I'm not calling every pitch, you know?
We were joking, John, that calling the Home Run Derby these days is like calling a Major League Baseball regular season game.
Like I think, except that it has a clock.
True.
Yeah, and kids like shagging balls all over the park. Besides that, a little bit different. City, you know, Toronto was kind of buzzing about what happened last night at Fenway with Mookie Betts, 13-pitch bomb off J-Hap, ended J-Hap's day, or night, I guess. You know, and I came in here today, and I said, outside of Trout, I think Mookie Betts has played himself into the second-best player in the league. Where does he rank for you, Mookie Betts?
Yeah, he's super special, and he's right on, you know, right there in the middle of the list, right after Trout. I would say that I think that there's a 1 and a 1A behind Mookie that probably has you know, at least the case for the next best, and that is Lindor and Ramirez in Cleveland. I mean, those two guys offensively are monsters. In Lindor, he plays, you know, a more primary defensive position than Betts does. And, I mean, they're ridiculous how good they are. So, but Betts is, it's amazing. And I don't know whether you guys have been next to him. And really, in all the three guys' cases, they're tiny.
Well, that's the thing.
These guys are tiny. I mean, Ramirez is small. Lindor is small. Betts is even smaller. And they're just remarkable athletes. It's pretty amazing.
The thing that amazes me, John, is Chris Sale. He's 6'6", 180 pounds. Like, he's built like a bunker, Rick. And he, I mean, it's incredible to me.
Yeah. I mean, he's thin and throws close to 100. But it's, you know, the thing about the game today is there are just so many good athletes. I do think that something will get adjusted to, but at the moment, with all the strikeouts and the ball not being in play, it's unfortunate that, in my opinion, we have the greatest collection of athletes that the sport has ever seen, and yet they don't get to put their stuff on display because they're just the guys who can run and throw don't get a chance to run and throw as much as they would have 15 years ago because the ball's just not played as much.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about that all the time, and it's kind of difficult with the Jays being who they are and what they are to break down individual moments of games. So we've been talking a lot about big picture stuff in baseball, and I mean, the numbers are what they are. The ball is just not in play very much. And
yeah, the thing I will tell you, though, and I think this is important, so the ball is not in play, and I don't think it's good, but I would also state for you guys that I don't think people understand what's taking place. They think that it's a lot of people think that it's guys just trying to hit home runs, and it is not. And they think that they don't understand that this is the most efficient way to score, period. It's too hard to get three hits in an inning. So you are absolutely better off trying for a walk and a home run. I mean, it's just, it's math. It is, when you look at the average velocity in the game, it's gone up almost 4 miles an hour in the last 15 years. And you're seeing fewer of them because these guys now, if you can't hit a slider, you're getting five of them to begin the at-bat, and thanks for playing. As much as the old-school guys sit there and say, oh, they don't go deep into the game. You know, with a few outliers aside, they're now grooming relievers not as, you know, the stinky non-starters. They're grooming them as weapons. And so ultimately, most of these teams are starting to be built as, you know, in your non-Verlander starts, your non-Kershaw starts, in the sixth inning, you're bringing in some guy throwing a bazillion who more than likely, no matter how good old-school starter guy wants to remember it being, the guy that they can bring in the sixth has a better chance to get through the order or the top three guys in the order than you do. So as much as people want to beef about it, what is, in terms of the skill sets and what's taking place right now, it is absolutely the most efficient utilization of what is taking place and the most efficient utilization of the data.
So, John, the two things I've heard talked about are, one, lowering the mound, and secondly would be reducing the size of pitching staffs. What do you think it is?
The second one, because there's a potential for injury risk. I don't, you know, the idea that someone would be out there and wearing it, I'm not in on. You know, it's funny. You said reducing the mound. I have not heard that one much. It is one that I would say it's fine. You know, I work with Rick Sutcliffe a lot, and he, you know, he jokingly talks about, I guess it's changed some, but even, you know, when I played high school baseball, I grew up in New York City. There were no mounds. I'm gonna pitch on. It was flat. You know what I'm saying? And he said the same thing. He's like, he grew up in Kansas City. He's like, I was drafted in the first round. He said, they pitch off a mound. He said, I'm 6'7". He said, when they put me on top of the mound, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. And ultimately, when you think about it, in one season, they reduced the height of the mound from 15 inches to 10 inches, and everybody was fine. So I think the reduction of the height of the mound is definitely something that should be considered. And it's funny, you're the first person that's brought it up. I feel like it isn't talked about enough, at least, and again, that's anecdotal, but I think that's something that should be looked at.
With John Shambi of ESPN, Jay Happ, you know, he didn't get much help last night defensively, but his past few starts have been pretty ugly. And he's the chip for the Blue Jays because with Donaldson injured, we don't know what that market's going to look like, and we're not even certain when he's going to be back. When it comes to Happ, I mean, he's by no means, you know, a Cy Young contender or a top-of-the-rotation guy, but he's got decent stuff. And prior to the past few starts, he's put up pretty good numbers. I mean, he's an all-star based on the fact that someone's got to represent this team. But do you see a perfect fit out there for him? Could you, do you have one team in mind where you think they really should be pursuing Jay Happ?
No, because I think you summed up his resume and likely impact. I mean, again, you're talking about whoever gets him. If it is at the trade deadline, you know, you're getting, what, 14 starts out of him or 15 starts out of him or thereabouts. For this year, I think he can help somebody make the playoffs. So I think that there are a number of destinations. I mean, I think that, you know, he could likely, in a really marginal way, help either the Red Sox or the Yankees win their division. I think that he'd be a helpful piece. I don't think he's someone that, you know, moves the needle in a dramatic way. And so because of that, I don't think that I feel like the impact that he could have would be on, you know, on multiple teams. I mean, heck, look, you know, the Dodgers have suffered a whole slew of injuries last year. They utilized their depth. You know, he certainly could help them to win the division. So there's a lot of, I think he could help a lot of teams. I just don't think, you know, the impact is stark, but I'd take him in a second.
Enjoy the brief break, I guess, the All-Star game, and the rest of the summer. I'm sure we'll catch up down the road. Thank you, John.
All right, see you guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
There's John Shambi, the voice of MLB on ESPN Radio. Doesn't sound that excited for the home run derby. Didn't really want to get into that.
Has the slam dunk contest and the home run derby kind of run their course? Like, once you see a ball go to the park, you've kind of seen it.
Yeah, it's not that compelling for me, but I think it is if you're in the building. Maybe sure. If it's your favorite
player. No one who's there complained. Like, you know what? Honestly, yeah. No one who's there complained.
The same thing with the dunk contest, right? If you're in the building.
You know, the hockey all-star game? No one that's there complained.
If you're there, skills competition, is it goofy? Yes. Does it mean anything? No. But you're there, it's entertaining, there's some buzz, the stars are kicking around. That's all it is. You know, and baseball, they own the platform. There's nothing else going on in the sports world. So it's all about the All-Star game. It's all about the home run derby. Matt Dunnigan will join us in studio in about 15 minutes. Argos.
I saw his first Canadian Football League pass.
In Edmonton?
Intercepted for a touchdown.
You bring that up to him often?
Actually, no. He actually made the tackle, I think, at the one. Yeah, we talk about it.
Okay. We'll put him on the spot, see if he can explain that to us. And Johnny Football, when are we going to see Manziel, the Ticats?
So what is your thing? Like, you think he should be playing now? I'm getting the sense you think he should. You want to see him play.
Well, I want to see him play. That doesn't mean he should be playing.
Right, that's like, two different things.
What I don't think has been brought up enough is, what if he sucks? Like, what if he just can't play?
Okay.
But I'm being serious, though. Like, everyone's like, and I'm a part of the problem because I want to see him play. You know, I've always said this, that would drag me into the CFL. Like, with Ricky Ray injured and more than likely retiring, bring Manziel in here and see what happens at BMO Field. I guarantee you get a spike.
You're saying the Argos should get him?
Oh, absolutely. They're not going to. I know they're not going to. I don't think they're interested, and Hamilton's not going to trade him here. But I think we talk so much about ticket sales and the lack of buzz for the Argos in the city, and that would change everything, I think. But if he's not any good, like, what if he doesn't look good in practice? Like, that's why he's not playing. It's not because of some big scheme to make sure that he doesn't get on the field.
It's a hard game to play. It's a hard thing. It's hard to come up here and learn this game.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. Doug Flutie, remember Doug Flutie saying a long time ago, you know, his first game with BC, he was throwing it out. He kind of paused for half a second, and all of a sudden it's like a 60-yard throw. Like, it's a long field. It's a wide field.
Yeah.
And making that throw is a hard one to make.
So, Hamilton... They got to be all about winning right now, right? And their quarterback's played really well.
Mazzoli's been terrific.
Mazzoli's been really, really quality for them. So you're not just going to hand it over to Manziel. I think in the long run, that's the plan.
But you know what? I mean, the thing is, what makes the most sense for the league as a whole, for the TV partners, for the sponsors, is to get Johnny Manziel playing.
Yes. But I don't think that's Hamilton's priority to make sure that the league is happy.
And not their obligation.
No.
Their obligation is to win football games.
And honestly, this may be in the this is probably in the best interest for Johnny Manziel, because we're not talking about him for the first time in his football career.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he was in Cleveland or Texas A&M, it was always, what's Johnny up to? What's he doing with his personal life?
Do you remember Flutie being on with us last year? We were down at BMO. Remember he came on with us? What he said? We asked him what quarterback he thought reminded him most of him that wasn't in the league. He said Johnny Manziel. Like, that's like he had not been signed. He was, you know, not playing football at the time. But Flutie said, watching him in college in the NFL, he felt like Johnny Manziel reminded him most of himself.
Well, I don't remember that conversation. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. But
I'm telling you, it did. I was sitting with you.
All right. Well, I was there, too. I'm saying I don't really remember that. But that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Doug Flutie was a small guy who ran around the field and was a brilliant college player, and this is the route he had to take. Very different era, though. Like, Flutie couldn't make it in the NFL because of his size. Where now, like Russell Wilson, there's a lot of smaller quarterbacks that they don't have that kind of bias anymore. So, yeah, I mean, I could see Flutie stand, but just because Flutie says it doesn't mean that it's actually true or that it's going to happen, you know? I guess that's my response.
This is me renting my house out at the Olympics again. Like, I throw something out, you're just gunning it down.
Yeah. No, I would love to see that happen. I said
I write letters complimenting people, and you shot that.
Well, that's not true. You didn't say complimenting people.
I did.
No, you started with crucifying people.
No.
And then later it was, I also
said... I think you said that letter writing was a waste of time. Was your...
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not something that I've ever thought of doing before, I guess. It's all anecdotal, man. It's in my own world.
I got a text from a buddy of mine who's listening.
Yeah.
Who's a CEO who said, if I got a letter from someone praising one of my employees, for sure that would help their career.
Really?
Yep.
This is going to open the door to fake letters. You realize that?
What do you mean fake letters?
Well, I could write a letter right now to TSN saying, Brian Hayes is the greatest person on earth. Everything he does is perfect. But sign it, Joe Blow from Red Deer, Alberta. How would you know that it wasn't from Joe Blow and that it was from me? You realize you can't track that kind of stuff.
Well, you could check the postmark, I guess, to see if it came from Red Deer.
Do you really think that they're going to do that? But you really think they're going to do that?
So you think funkymonkey1975
yes.
at hotmail.com, that doesn't worry that maybe that guy's not legit?
That could be my burner account.
Or Angry Ernie, you know, at Angry Ernie in Thunder Bay. Is tweeting at you and actually isn't in Thunder Bay. Like, that doesn't concern
I'm
you at all?
I'm thinking that, but we're talking about letters, so writing letters.
I know, but what I'm asking you is, just bear with me for a second.
Yeah, okay.
So on the list of unreliable things, Twitter handles, emails from Hotmail and Gmail addresses, you put those in the same par as a handwritten letter.
I'm saying it could be without any corroboration. Like, I could write a letter right now and sign somebody else's name.
Yes, you could.
How would you? Why would the radar be going off that would be a fake letter?
Well, I think if it was a lone wolf letter, your boss might not take. But if your boss got a lot of letters,
well, but how many letters do you think are coming in?
So how should people judge whether a show is successful? Like, how should people judge you as a broadcaster?
Well, I mean, there's ratings, and there's data, and there's downloads, and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, word of mouth.
Do you think the TSN radio? Do you think Jeff McDonald, our boss, should be monitoring the Twitter account?
No, I don't think so at all.
Okay,
but I'm saying, like, letters, because it can go both ways. If I get a bad letter, should I lose my career?
Well,
because it can go the opposite way.
If you throat punched a guy outside a bar,
right? Of course, but if your CEO buddy.
Yeah.
Got a letter about one of his employers and said, I really don't like this person. I think he's an awful person.
Would that cause him problems in his career? If they detailed a specific incident and said, this person was rude to me or was ignorant to me.
In their free time, not representing the company.
I'm saying that at the store that, you know, so said, hey, this person. Then for sure you would investigate
yes,
that.
Yes, I agree with you. But this was different, though. Like, the original story, this is 2.5 hours ago, was a bottle of wine restaurant in Edmonton.
Yes.
You were not Gord Miller representing TSN. There wasn't a camera around you. You weren't mic'd up.
No. Right. Well, I usually am, but yeah.
Right. But that was from your personal life.
Yes.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, but and this is
knew,
a much larger
but the
conversation.
Because I was from TSN, so it reflects on TSN that I did it.
Well, and you're obviously in a different spot because you're a public figure. People know who you are. But in the everyday world, You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, should a negative letter about what someone's done
in their private life
say, yeah, exactly.
No.
I don't think so either.
No.
But a positive letter, it sounds like it would help.
That's that guy from Hydro that got fired for yelling at the reporter, right? And then he came back and said, I was in my spare time. You can't fire me for that.
Anyway, it's a heavy topic.
Was it?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what? I'm not mailing it enough, am I? I think
that's the problem.
I feel like you're pulling out the Flutie stuff.
I'm not disputing. I'm saying I was there, and I don't remember him making that comparison. So if I'm mailing it in on a Friday, you're not. You're pulling out anecdotes.
I'm on next Friday with MacArthur. I will like.
All right, take advantage.
Totally mail it in.
All right. Matt Dunnigan's coming in studio.
One of my favorite people in the world.
All right. Well, have you done games with Matt?
100.
Yeah, you've done a million games.
I've known Matty literally for 40 years.
Okay. So we'll get him in here and talk about the CFL. That's coming up next. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love, and you can mail it in with Skip the Dishes at skipthedishes.com by using the promo code OVERDRIVE for $7 off your first order when you spend $15 or more. So go to skipthedishes.com and use the promo code OVERDRIVE. Matt Dunnigan will be in studio here momentarily. Friday Night Football tonight on TSN. The Hamilton Tiger Cats, who we were talking about earlier, they are on a bye week this week.
Yeah.
And Calgary just smoked Ottawa last night. And the Stampeders are now 4-0. They've given up 38 points.
In four games.
38 points. And only Winnipeg has scored more points than them. So they've got
by the way, their all-world quarterback left the game in the first half last night.
Mm-hmm. But as we were talking about in the break, it's completely irrelevant.
It doesn't matter for them. It honestly doesn't matter for them. They got to win the Grey Cup like this year and next.
Yeah.
To make up for...
Well, I want to ask Dunnigan about that. Like, if they had have held on and won the past two Grey Cups, when they lost to Ottawa in just miraculous fashion a couple of years ago, and we know what happened with the Argos last year, if they had have won those two and started 4-0 the way that they are this year, are we starting to talk about them as like the greatest CFL team of all time?
Well, the Eskimos of the 70s and 80s, right? Won five in a row. With three different starting quarterbacks.
I mean, it's got to be closing in on a conversation.
Sure,
anyway.
And I think any time in these days that you put up a long string of wins with the parity, the restrictions with the caps and everything else, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And I think that, but the problem for Calgary is that they've coughed it up the last 2 years. So so they can win all the games they want. The Stampeders can win. They can go 18-0 this year. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter if they go 18-0 because they got to win the Grey Cup.
All right, Matt Dunnigan's in here. Did you almost blow a wheel there on that chair?
I almost did.
Yeah, you're good, though.
I'm good.
What's happening, man?
Well, just getting a tutorial down there in Studio 6 with the new gadget we got going for tonight's pregame. So,
okay. Oh, yeah?
Just trying to get that, wrap my head around that.
Nice.
Yeah, we've seen it in FIFA in the World Championship. Soccer guy's been using the board, and it's fantastic. So we're just incorporating that in our show tonight.
Nice.
Who's got a better accent, you or the soccer guys?
Soccer guys.
You think so?
Soccer
guys. You can't understand Stephen Caldwell, can you?
I do need
subtitles.
Subtitles.
The Scottish subtitles.
Yeah, I just turn it down and just watch the game.
We were talking about Calgary, and they're 4-0 now, and they've given up 38 points through 4 weeks.
It's ridiculous.
Yet, you know, Gord pointed this out, without a Grey Cup. But, I mean, the last 2 years, they've been the best team in the league by a mile, and they lose in the Grey Cup.
Yeah. You got to get yourself there. You know, I was there 6 times. And only won it twice, but I always say you got to get yourself there in order to have a chance to win it. And they're a well-polished football team, and for some reason or another, it hasn't worked out for them the last 2 years. And it comes down to finishing, and they hadn't been able to finish in the big game. But they're a fun team to watch, dominant football team right now, where everybody else in the league is really not very consistent. And so when you watch Calgary go out there and impose themselves on the opposition week after week this early in the football season when everybody else is struggling out of the gate, it's pretty clear that they're a focused football team. Once again, I tip my hat to Dave Dickinson and his staff for getting them right.
Is that good for football? You think it's good for the league to have one team that looks like it's that much better than everyone else?
Yeah, I think it's – yeah, you have that measuring stick. And I don't mind it at all. I think you have that in basketball. I think you have that in baseball right now. I'm not sure in the hockey world if you have that. I think there's a bit of a surprise this past year, certainly in the hockey world. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind it at all. They're the class of the league, and until they actually finish it off right, they can't say anything. Just go about their business, which is they take care of so far, and they'll be right back there. So I'm a little concerned because knees can be tricky and finicky. What I saw last night, and Bo Levi Mitchell going down and not being put into the ball game. I can understand why he didn't play in the second half because they were up 20-0. Didn't look like Ottawa's mustering up any type of pushback, and so sit him out. And their defense took over, and I thought that Nick Arbuckle did a nice job of being limited action and doing some good things. But I don't mind Calgary flexing their muscles earlier at all right now, Ward.
Matt Dunnigan in studio. The Argos, you know, you talk about injuries. We know what happened with Ricky Ray. Mm-hmm. And I'm of the impression that everyone's just bracing for him to retire. But yeah. I haven't heard anything on that. I mean, do you expect an answer from Ricky Ray at any point soon? I mean, he's not going to play anytime soon. But we know that doctors have told him they would suggest he doesn't play.
Yeah, so what's the alternative?
Yeah, no, I hear you. But
I don't think he has one. Mm-hmm. He's got doctors telling him, recommending he doesn't play football again. He's 38 years old. He's won 4 Grey Cups. He's got 2 young daughters, and he's probably got a bigger fish to fry.
Yeah,
and I think that decision's been made, but just hasn't been announced. With respect to Ricky and his decision and the Toronto Argonauts, let them have that moment whenever they see fit. But I think the writing's pretty clear that we're all seeing right now. And James Franklin is the future, and we'll see how he fares tonight.
How do you feel about Franklin as a quarterback?
Well, I gave him a 5 on his effort last week. It was a good start and good finish, but in the middle, there wasn't a lot there. And it's not all him. You know, you got to credit the Edmonton Eskimos for being out there as well. But James Franklin is what he's been billed to be. He is a leader. He's going to have a chance to lead this football team now. He's 3-1 as a starter. He's thrown a little over 200 footballs in his young career. And, you know, I've said that he reminds me a lot of Warren Moon and the way he throws the football. I don't think his arm is as strong as Warren's was, but he's thick. Hey, look, this kid can do it all. When he came out of high school, he played outside of Dallas in Denton County and Lake Dallas School. And he played 2 years there. And when he came out his senior year, he was labeled by Rivalist.com, which is a big rating system down in the States for high school kids coming out in the university level. He's rated number 4 dual quarterback in the country. Then he went to Mizzou. His sophomore year, almost rushed for 1,000 yards and 15 touchdowns his sophomore year. So he can do it with his legs. He can do it with his arm. He's a natural-born leader, in my opinion. He's not too high, not too low. He's with Ricky Ray. He's with Mark Trestman. He's with a good group of people over there in Toronto that can continue to polish him. And so far, so good, but we'll see what happens tonight on the road.
But it takes time.
Brick.
But Matt, your point to me has always been it takes time. We remember Anthony Calvillo almost being out of the league mm-hmm. after the stops in Vegas and Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Like the anointing a guy, he's the next great quarterback, puts so much on them, but it takes so much time, right?
Yep, I mean, it does. And this guy's been groomed in Edmonton. Now he's being groomed here in Toronto. Now he's getting his opportunity to play. So we'll see. That process is going to be elevated and expedited, and it's a good thing because I think he's ready. Does he have the pieces around him? We'll soon find out. So does it put extra pressure on a young quarterback by saying that? Yeah, and I believe I phrased my comments last week, and now I don't want to put undue pressure on this kid. But he reminds me a lot of Warren Moon. He does. You know, it's kind of like when Zach Kolaris was on top of his game in 2013, 14, and part of 15. He reminded me a lot of Doug Flutie, the way he created and held the ball out in his hand like this when he was running and keeping the defense on their toes and in a rocking chair situation coming up or coming back. They didn't know Zach was like that. So, yeah, you say things because, yeah, that player reminds me of David Williams, or that player reminds me of the way James West used to play. Well, that's a good compliment. And yet it can put undue pressure, but it's the nature of the beast. I think people always go back to comparisons, and that's what I'm doing with this kid. And I think it's feathers in his hat. Now, can he live up to that? Is he going to be in the Hall of Fame at the end of his career in both countries? You know, it's like, no. I mean, who knows? But he reminds me a lot of Warren Moon at this point.
What about Johnny Manziel?
Well, I love where he's at. I really think that this is really good for him to be associated with football. He'll tell you that. He loves his team, his brothers, and it's good for him personally moving forward. And I think it's a really big step. And people might think he's making steps in his career right now as we speak, but I think he is. He is doing the right things on a regular basis, being a teammate, and being a pro. And I think that's huge in moving forward based on a 25-year-old trying to get over the hurdles that he's had to overcome and continues to deal with. So I think he's continuing to make growth even though he's not playing. And my question a couple weeks ago was, if Chris Streveler is thrown into the fire straight out of college and doing this, why can't Johnny Manziel be?
About Winnipeg, yeah.
And the big question and the answer is pretty simple. Because he's got Jeremiah Mazzoli in front of him.
The guy in front of him has been the best player in the league.
And in spite of playing poorly last time he was on the football field against Saskatchewan, he still threw for over 300 yards, and he was off his game and uncomfortable because of Saskatchewan and their defense that night. It was a brutal, ugly game to watch.
Yeah.
But Mazzoli continued to be competitive. And I dare say that if that was another quarterback, they would have thrown for 200 yards, turned the ball over three or four times, and been probably knocked out of the ball game. But he stayed in there, gave his team a chance to win. But I just think that's the reason why. I mean, it's different with Manziel and Mazzoli, because Mazzoli is a six-year veteran in Hamilton, 8 years as a pro. And he's flexing his muscles right now, becoming an elite quarterback.
Matt Dunnigan in studio. And that's where my beef has always been is, you know, I've always felt like the negotiating rights system is just, it's stupid. I don't like it. I've never liked it. And I think it's really been highlighted
like
here.
Like a neg list?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. The negotiation list. Mm-hmm. I don't like it because, you know, I think there's at least a couple teams in this league where Manziel probably should be playing or could be playing.
Yeah.
Don't you think Montreal would make a huge pitch for him if they could have?
If they could have.
Or Winnipeg. Exactly. They can't because of the system, right?
Right, right. And I think Saskatchewan would be in the mix right now.
Right.
And coach is suicide to trade him right now. It's just not going to happen in the East for sure. If that ever did come to fruition, got to be somewhere in the West. But, as you see right now with what's going on and watching Nick Arbuckle, you know, being inserted in the ball game 30 minutes in last night and – you know, you just never know. You're one play away from number two and two plays away from number three. So you got to have those quality backups. June's put himself in a pretty intriguing spot, one that's been under the spotlight ever since he made the comments last offseason about Johnny Manziel, arguably be the best quarterback ever play in the CFL. And we're just not going to be able to find out until something changes over there. And, but he is an intriguing fella, Gord. I got a chance to spend time with him down in Austin. And I saw him at College Station at the pro day there, and I've been impressed with his journey, and I'm glad people are giving him a second chance, and I'm glad to see him in uniform, simulated into football again.
Yeah, I'm with you though that easing back into it, and he's off page six. You know, TMZ's not following him around. Mm-hmm. No one knows what he's doing in his personal life. Mm-hmm. Like, in a way, that's probably just as important because that was what was going on with Manziel. He was more of a celebrity than a football player.
We're only talking about as a football player. All we're talking
that's
about
what it seems
is
like,
he was
yeah.
a football player.
That's
which
awesome.
That's
which
what
is,
he needs.
That's a step in the right direction. That is growth. Yeah.
Great seeing you, Matt. Enjoy it tonight.
Yeah, guys. Anytime.
Right? We'll see you, Matty.
Yeah, I'm just right down the hall.
You can pop over whenever you want.
Gord, is this going to be a full-time gig for you?
No. We're doing some games together in September and October, I think.
Yeah.
Crazy town.
Yeah.
When you work with Matty, it is crazy town.
Why do you say that?
He sings on the air.
I try to enjoy myself.
Honestly, when you leave a football stadium with Matt Dunnigan, it's like walking out with the mayor. Like we had a flight to catch one time.
First of all, it's you, and it's not me.
He's posing for pictures. He's shaking hands. I'm like, Matt, we got to go.
Yeah.
These are my people, though. That's you got to take time for the folks.
I know. You're right. But, Matt, the plane's leaving in 45 minutes.
That's your flight. My flight's like 4 hours later.
Exactly. Yeah. He can get out whenever he wants.
There you go. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. See you later. There he is, Matt Dunnigan of the CFL on TSN. Again, Argos in Edmonton. You can watch it on TSN tonight. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. Best Bets brought to you by Proline, fading Baltimore as always, over the number in the Jays game tonight, in Atlanta at home.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I every time I get a shot at just making fun of Baltimore, I take advantage. Go down 20, you can score 84. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game. Big news in the NHL world today.
Yeah, the suit brought by the players, retired players against the league. They're trying to have a class action suit with it. More than 5,000 players can be represented in one trial. The judge in St. Paul, Minnesota, has said no. There's too many differences in state medical laws, so the players are basically on their own now, and that means it'll be very difficult for them to pursue cases because it. First of all, the NHL can
flex their muscles,
and depositions would take forever. You know, the one problem you have in these cases, the NFL settled because it was bad for business to be in a fight with your former player. They gave a little bit of TV money away. But the players would have to say, how many concussions did you have? The league would say, how many concussions did you have before you got to the NHL? Hmm. Did you report your symptoms? Did you follow protocol? Because we got your medical records. Did you understand that hockey was a dangerous sport to play? You know, all those things. It becomes very difficult. And that's the real problem. Hmm. And they also say, what are we hiding from you? CTE wasn't written about until 2009. So it's a very difficult case to make. I feel horrible for ex-players. And I don't know. I mean, the NHL may not have a legal obligation to take care of them, but these teams and the league have a moral obligation to do something for players who...
After their careers,
yeah, I think so.
I think that's a slippery slope.
It is.
I mean, because, you know, every profession has their own gripe and not everybody can be protected. And you're very well compensated when you play. When you stop playing, you know that eventually, that's another thing. Did you know it was a contact sport? Yes. Do you know that eventually you have to stop playing?
Our friend Brian Stemmel, right, was almost killed in the Hahnenkamm and Kitzbühel. He can't sue anyone. If you ski downhill at 90 miles an hour, bad things could happen. It's a
really complicated topic. It is. I mean, I've always said, listen, if there was negligence, if the league withheld something from the players deserve all they can get. They should,
but
proving that's very difficult to do. And that is a big hit for them in terms of the court system today. Scotty Mac will be in here next week. I'm off next week. Gord, you're in from what, Wednesday through Friday, I think?
Yeah.
So you'll be in here for Mail It In Friday and the Skip the Dishes ordering next Friday.
Oh, fantastic.
You've set that up beautifully. And then I'm back after that. I think you're in for that week too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're doing a bunch of shows together, so... Well, keep everything on the up and up here next week.
I'll do what I can. We'll try not to wreck the show.
See what you can do. Scotty Mack will be back Monday at 4 p.m. I'm already mailing it in. He will chat then.